Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, welcome to, I'm going to say epic, Eric.
Epic?
Yeah, episode of...
I'm honored to be part of Epic.
Awesome. TFL Car Chat, and today we're going to be talking all about off-roading, and I'm here with my man, my good friend, Eric Ross, who is with a company that he started called Sierra Mechanica.
Yeah, you got it.
And you've been a police officer, but now you are an incredible off-road instructor in both off-roading and off-road recovery, and that's what we're going to be talking about in this podcast.
I'm flattered. Thank you.
Yeah.
And thanks for the invite.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad you're here. Mm-hmm. We actually just went off-roading about a month ago in Moab. We went to Chicken Corners. Mm-hmm. But I thought this would be a really fun conversation, and we're going to do it in three parts. The first part, we're going to talk about kind of off-roading 101. Then we're going to have a quick interview with our friend Val, who does the Onyx off-road app, and talking about how that can help you off-road. And then
Excellent. We'll
end up with off-road recovery. But let's talk about your background really quickly. So what's your background in off-roading?
Wow, off-roading. So I'm one of those Colorado native folks. Mm-hmm. And off-roading wasn't really a thing when I was young. I was doing the backpacking thing and yep. all that good stuff. But yep. in the early 90s, I was actually living here in Boulder and fell in love with an 87 4Runner. And that was the beginning of, I guess, the next 35 years of adventuring. So series of 4Runners. I learned how to off-road in that thing, which meant I got a lot of bad habits. But about 15 years ago, I guess maybe going on 20 now, I kind of decided that I wanted to do it for real. So I decided to buy an FJ Cruiser. I built it, learned as much as I could about working on that thing, and then actually spent some time getting actual training. When I was in law enforcement, I was actually a law enforcement driving instructor. So I kind of had that as a good basis. But that turned into getting some off-road driving training and spending a lot of time at events, guiding trails. I now work with your friend James, working yep. on the Rocky Mountain Toyota Roundup. I'm a volunteer with Colorado.
Which is happening very soon.
It is. It's happening in way too soon, yeah. if I'm honest. Yeah, yeah. yeah. Just a few weeks away.
You know, let me pick up on something you just yeah. said, because yeah. sometimes the best way to learn something is to unlearn whatever you've learned. So you said that you learned a bunch of bad habits. Can you give me, like, is top five too many? Can we kind of count them down? Give
oh,
me,
wow.
like, five top bad habits that you see that you either learned or that mm-hmm. you see the people you instruct have learned. So what are the, like, let's start with number five.
Okay. Well, number five. We'll just do five. I don't know if they're going to be in order of operation or
right.
not.
We'll just start with five and count down to one.
But so. Most people are casual drivers.
Yeah.
So we do the one hand on the steering wheel. We make our seating position really comfortable, and we're just focused on looking down the highway. And when you're driving on the road or off road, you really need to be a little bit more, you need to seat yourself properly so you have a good field of view and you have control of the vehicle. And most people just don't have that. And so as I'm teaching folks, we'll talk about seating position, we'll adjust it, we'll adjust mirrors, we'll make sure they can see stuff, and we'll talk about hand position and using your feet. But that all goes out the window really fast because people fall back into their habit of just the casual one hand on the steering wheel. I see people all the time with their hand out the window, all that kind of stuff. So top of the list for off-road driving is people just being in control of their vehicle and how you position yourself to actually do that. That's probably more than one thing, but there you go.
That's good. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, one of the things that people always used to teach was you got to keep your thumbs out of the steering wheel.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, you know, that was, especially with non-power steering cars, mm-hmm. you could hit a rock and that steering wheel would spin quickly. I think with power steering doesn't happen as much now.
Oh, still one of my top pieces of advice.
Okay, yeah, so number four is keep your thumbs out of the steering wheel.
I mean, bump steer is a thing, especially off-road, especially if you're going a little too fast. And even if you don't break something, you might tweak a wrist, and that just makes the rest of your day kind of miserable. So
keep the wheel in your hands, but the thumbs out, not in.
Thumbs out. And, you know, I teach shuffle steering, too, so that facilitates that, so you're not running into the wheel spokes and all that good stuff.
Number three,
people not going prepared or planning ahead. So people all the time, they, especially down here, it's, you know, going to be 92 degrees today, and they're like, hey, let's go run a trail, and they're in their flip-flops and their shirts and their tank top. And they got their bottle of water, and they don't check the weather or the conditions that are going to be very different at 10,000 feet, 50 miles from here. And they go up, and maybe the day goes fine, and that's all good, but inevitably somebody has an oops, and they find themselves up there in the cold and the rain getting hypothermic because they didn't bring clothes, they didn't realize the weather was going to be that bad.
I was just watching on TikTok this young lady who went and did, is it Jay? It's past Boulder Reservoir. It's like J89 or 91. It's this little off-road trail.
Yeah, by Gross Road Reservoir?
Yeah. And I guess she took her Subaru in there.
Yeah, our volunteers went up there with
Colorado. Yeah, I saw that. And she became kind of social media famous for getting stuck. And then I don't know exactly what happened. I saw it in the video. It looked like she took her Subaru onto a trail that was maybe beyond the Subaru cross trek's ability and then got a flat tire and then had to get rescued, which is something you've done in the past. But that's kind of an example of maybe wrong vehicle, right trail, or wrong trail, right vehicle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and I think in particular in her case, it wasn't her intent to go on a trail like that, but because she wasn't familiar with the area and was following, I think she was actually following the navigation app in her vehicle because her phone had died.
Yeah.
And so that just knows where roads are. Yeah. So she was following a road, and that road rapidly turned into a four-wheel drive road that had been washed out pretty significantly because of all the rain we had. And she got past that infamous point of no return where she, you know, going backwards it was going to be just as bad as trying to go forwards, and got in a little bit of a pickle.
That is an awful feeling.
Especially like, when you're by yourself.
I don't know what's ahead.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do know what's behind. That was horrible. So, you know, do I roll the dice and keep going forward, or do I try to go back through the stuff that I barely made it through?
Well, this is a good segue.
Yeah.
Because another thing that I see people do is, along with that lack of preparedness, they don't stop, get out of the vehicle, and just go look.
Especially water crossings.
Yeah, they just keep driving, and you know they've got a capable vehicle, but they don't know what's around the next corner. They don't know what's over the next rise. They don't know how deep the water is, things like that. And so I always encourage folks, if you're not familiar with the trail, or even if you haven't been there in a while, I mean, our trails are different every year. So when you get to that obstacle,
especially in the spring,
take a minute and hop out and go and check and make sure that rock that you thought wasn't there or was there is the same as it was last time, or around that next corner doesn't get worse than what you're already in.
And we'll talk about Onyx, but it's also very helpful if you have an app like Onyx that rates the trails and has user or crowdsourced information, because one of the things that Val will go into a little bit later is that trails change, especially in the spring.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a really good bit of advice. I've certainly been there. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, I'm always really wary of water, especially because I used to do a lot of dirt biking. Mm-hmm. So in a car, you seem like, I can go through it.
Yeah.
On a motorcycle, you're like, oh, I don't know if I can go through it.
Right.
Because either you're going to drown the bike or you're going to drown yourself.
Well, and momentum is a necessity, and that is sometimes your enemy. So there's a challenge there.
All right. So that's number three. How about number two?
Number two. I thought we were on number two already, but that's okay. We'll go to the next one.
There's so many.
There are so many. So kind of top of mind for me is mostly that folks don't go prepared, and they don't think about what might happen while they're out there. And so we already talked a little bit about that preparedness is you know, checking the weather, looking at a map, figuring out where you're going, being familiar with the trail. But you also need to be prepared to be out there for a little while if something happens. And that can be just the clothing that you take with you is really important, being protected from the sun, the wind, the rain. Do you have food? Do you have enough water? We live in a semi-arid desert environment, and you get up to elevation, and you know the moisture is literally getting sucked out of your body, so you need to be hydrating all day long. And then what if you do get stuck and have to stay there for a night or two? You know, do you have something to provide shelter? Do you have enough food for that time period? And do you have a plan that somebody knows about so that if you don't show up, somebody's actually going to come look for you and know where to look?
Yeah. I mean, what we see a lot here in Colorado is people fly in, they rent a Wrangler at the airport, and then they think, okay, now I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well,
you're not.
I worked up in Aspen for many years. And so, you know, the elevation in town is 8,500 feet. And people would hop in their, you know, their jet, private or not, and they'd fly out from Florida. They'd be drinking in the jet, and they'd land, and they would wonder why they were getting really sick. It's because they were having acute mountain sickness and getting sick from the altitude.
All right, number one. We can keep going longer, too.
Not
very informal here.
Yeah, I think we just hit number one, the be prepared part.
Okay.
There's a lot to that because it's, you know, the navigation, the being prepared to be there for a little while, carrying some tools if you need to do some basic repairs, some recovery kit and stuff like that. So that's kind of a five-part number two, number one.
Now, I would say for me, it's having maybe some other form of communication beyond just your phone, because chances are anywhere in Colorado, once you go off-road, you're probably going to go out of service.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag for me. I like being able to go someplace where there's no service, but it's gotten better and better. So yeah, we have cellular communications that are pretty good. You know, people are using radios to talk to each other on the trail. I often have conversations with folks that they think that radio is going to be a lifesaver, and it's not really. If you happen to be a ham radio operator and you've got a good radio and you know how to use repeaters and all that stuff, that can be a lifesaver.
Yeah, but that's a little, James does that.
Yeah, but it's a little tricky.
It is
a little bit tricky, and it's not a given. There's plenty of holes in the radio network, just like there are in the cellular network. So having some sort of satellite device that you can either...
A sat phone, but those are expensive.
They are. It depends on what you're doing, right? I think what folks are starting to rely on a little bit are the new cellular communications that are satellite-based. So, you know, like the iPhone 14 and above, you can use...
In an emergency.
Text, SOS, and it'll use satellite communications.
But that's hit or miss, too.
It is hit or miss. And honestly, if I'm spending a lot of time in the backcountry, in particular if I'm doing multi-day trips, I want to have some redundancy in the stuff that I have. So I want to have a phone and a satellite device, and that I know that somebody on the other end is going to be able to communicate with me.
Yeah, and of course Starlink is another solution.
Yeah,
that some people have. Yeah,
yeah, and more. And the nice thing about Starlink is you can share with other people too. So if one person has it, the whole group kind of has it, which is really nice.
No, when I did a lot of dirt biking, I had a little GPS tracker. You couldn't really communicate, but if you got in trouble, you could.
Yes.
You could hit it, and it would basically, using satellites, send an emergency call with your location.
Just a beacon.
There's
something wrong here.
Come help me.
Yeah. What's nice about some of the newer ones is that you're able to communicate by text, so the search and rescue team can actually ask you questions and be like, so what's going on? Is it that you're cold and wet or somebody injured? All that good stuff.
And let's kind of take a step back and talk about what happens when things do go wrong, because oftentimes they do. It's not like if you're, let's say, going down the road and you get a flat tire and now you call AAA and then, you know, somebody comes by within an hour or two and tows your car away. Like this, I'm sure this example of this girl in the cross trick we used, which is actually that trail is not very far from Boulder.
No.
As a crow flies, it's probably 5 miles.
Yeah.
But yet I'm sure that was a long operation to get it out of there. Because I know I've been on a few and I know how this works, right? Because you could, if you get stuck, actually, and this could be the same in other places, I don't know, I've only done it in Colorado, you could call a commercial tow rig, but that's going to be crazy expensive.
Could be, yes.
Like thousands.
Yeah.
Or then you can rely on the organization that we supported in the past, which is, what's the name of the organization?
Colorado 4x4 Rescue and Recovery.
Which are a bunch of volunteers.
Yeah, fantastic group of folks.
But they're all kind of living their lives, and all of a sudden they get a call.
Yeah, so I mean, it takes a while. It's a little bit tricky. So when you think about regular search and rescue teams in Colorado, they're usually associated with the sheriff's office. And when they get a call, everybody shows up. That's sort of the mandate. We're all using our own vehicles, our own fuel, our own gear. Our members pay to get trained professionally. But yes, most of us are actually working full time. And so when we get a call, we try to cobble together a team, but it may be hours. And there are some circumstances where we're going to go back the next day or later that week, depending on where it is and how complex it is.
And you've been on those rescues.
Yeah, I was on one last night, and I'll probably be headed to one up north here later.
Tell me what happened last night.
Last night, we had a father who was having a wonderful Father's Day with his wife and his 5-year-old and his 1-year-old, and they decided to go up just off Fall River Road onto Hamlin Gulch.
So this is Rocky Mountain National Park?
No. This is just right off of Fall River Road and I-70.
Oh, okay.
So outside of Idaho Springs.
Okay.
This particular section of trail is notorious for us. I stopped counting at like 12 or 15 recoveries on it.
Wow.
Because it's one of those trails where you see something that looks dangerous, you try to avoid it, and that's actually worse.
So instead of going over the obstacle, you go around
it. You kind of go around it, and there's all the desiccated granite, and you slide off, and then you can't go anywhere without making it worse. It's also the place where I did my very first recovery with the organization about 8 or 9 years ago.
So what was this family driving, and what happened?
They were driving a very nice fifth-gen 4Runner.
Okay.
And
so very off-road capable.
Very, very off-road capable, somebody who had a little bit of experience, and just made, and as he put it, he said, I made a bad decision.
Which is easy.
Yeah. And, you know, he went left when he should have, he went low and left and when he should have stayed high and right, and he just slid off. And it was actually really good that he stopped, because it's one of those situations where if you keep on trying, you can actually make it substantially worse.
So now you're off the trail and your wheels are creating a slippery situation,
yeah.
Right? Because they're digging in.
Yep.
And so instead of actually pulling you out, they're pushing you down.
You're spinning wheels and you're actually losing traction The angle's getting steeper and the surface is getting looser. And so, yeah. So he rightly made the decision to stop. You know, family went and hung out in the shade while we put a team together. And we went up there and spent about an hour getting him out. And everybody had a good day.
If he had had a winch, you think he could have winched himself out of that?
So the short answer is no. Hmm. The longer answer is if he knew how to use a winch and properly anchor the rear of his vehicle as well as winching from the front, he probably would have been fine. We had to use what's called a pendulum maneuver, which is something we use a lot because of all the slides, the people that slide off the trail. He might have been able to pull himself out. So you never know until you kind of rig things and start pulling and seeing what the dynamics of the vehicle is.
Yeah,
so,
I hate shelf roads.
Just for that reason. Well, I mean, but they're also some of the most scenic, right? You get up there, you're above tree line, there's nothing impeding your view. So
shelf roads are, guys, by the way, watch your ring.
Sorry.
It's just, I'm sure the people out there get annoyed by it. It's just something that is good to know. Anyway, a shelf road is any road that's cut into the side of a mountain where you're kind of going, traversing the side of a mountain, and you've got, on one side, you've got the mountain, the other side, you've usually got a precarious fall, and it's easy to go off the side. And that's when you're like, you think, okay, so you think to yourself, okay, so let's say I get two wheels off the shelf road and I have a winch.
Yeah.
And then if you could find, let's say there's a handy tree, which there probably isn't.
But
let's say there was, and you can actually winch the tree. The problem is it's not going to pull you straight up out of that situation.
Right.
It's going to pull you kind of sideways, and your back, like you said, is going to start to pivot down the mountain, and then you've got the car dangling from the winch.
Right. So you end up sort of crab walking, and you may end up in a position where you're now literally hanging off a tree, and that could be potentially worse than not having the equipment, the gear, and the experience to do it right.
Well, at least he made the right decision.
How
long did it take you guys to get him out of there from when he made the call, do you think?
I don't know. We probably spent about an hour and a half, you know.
But when how long before you all got there?
Oh, let's see. I think he called around 2 or 3. We got up there around 5.
So it takes
a few hours to get up there. He'd already been trying to get out, too, and he'd been out driving all day.
Okay.
I mean, a typical thing – so here's a funny for everybody. So Sunday's 4 o'clock.
Yes.
We can almost be guaranteed
that someone's going to get a call
because somebody's been wheeling all weekend or wheeling all day, and they got stuck and they realized that
there's Cole Shore in the shelf road. I think.
Oh, there's a fantastic shelf road. Yes, that looks like Black Bear Pass.
I think that is Black Bear.
Notorious in and of itself.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah, fortunately, we don't get a lot of folks sliding off of that one because that's a little more entertaining than usual.
Yes, there's that famous Jeep that rolls.
Pretty scary.
Oh yeah, and there's that turn that's really hard to make.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to kind of 101. So somebody wants to go an off-road, what do you teach them first? So look, guys, one of the things that Eric does so well, and I've seen him do, especially on this trail ride we did, is if you're interested in learning how to off-road and you don't know the trails and you don't know what you're doing, or you want to learn more about what to do right versus what to do wrong, this is what you teach. So let's say that I'm a novice and I call you and I'm like, hey Eric, I need some help. I just bought what did I just buy? What's the most common vehicle you get?
Well, I got a call this morning, a guy has a Subaru. So
okay,
we'll
just bought a Subaru. Perfect.
Yeah.
And let's say I went crazy and got the more lifted one, the Wilderness.
Right. The Wilderness, you're ready to go and try it out.
Yeah. Okay. So what would you tell me?
So the way I normally set up my classes, I try to spend a couple of hours what I call ground school. And that is really like starting at the basics of, okay, let's find out what your experience level is first. There are actually a lot of people who have a lot of experience, but they got a new vehicle or vice versa, right? You can have a really, really well-built rig, but you've never driven it before, so that can pose its own problems. So we talk about, you know, your capabilities, the vehicle's capabilities, and the environment. That's sort of the trifecta of things that we try to cover.
Yeah.
But that ground school starts with, we talked about seating position, right? How to sit in your vehicle so you can control it properly. We go over vehicle inspections of Vehicle 360. So before you go on a trail, before you leave your house even, check out your vehicle. Make sure it's going to get you where you want to go without, you know, finding that leak on the trail as opposed to in your driveway. So pop the hood, check fluids, look at belts, look at ball joints, look at bushings. Getting to understand what vehicle profiles look like so that if you're driving, you know where the low points on your vehicle is, know what kind of approach angle, departure angle, breakover angle you have. If you're spotting other people, being able to evaluate their vehicle so you know what they need to avoid. And that's not just the undercarriage. Everybody looks at the undercarriage and wants to know where, you know, differentials and skid plates and sliders are. But these days we got people with rooftop tents. We're hanging stuff off. Hanging stuff off the sides now. Maybe we have awnings. I've been doing some work with adventure vans these days. So whole different vehicle profile. And then a pretty long discussion about just vehicle dynamics and what four-wheel drive systems do, you know, how ABS works as opposed to a traction control system, what lockers are, all that kind of stuff.
So basics of off-road vehicles.
Yeah. Just to lay the groundwork, because a lot of people don't know what that basic stuff is. When we're talking about it on the trail, and I can say, hey, when we get to this obstacle, you need to make sure that you've got appropriate approach angle, they know what they're talking about. But that rapidly shifts into going and driving and, you know, getting people familiar with where their vehicle is and just spotting a couple rocks in the road and being, you know, put your tire on that as you're driving by so you know where your vehicle is. And in particular, what most people don't think about is where their rear tires are. Our front tires and rear tires don't follow the same track, so you need to know where those are, adjusting your mirrors so you can see those. Getting people out comfortable with off camber. So taking them and putting them at a little bit of an angle so they understand what that looks like. Because one of the big questions is, well, what's that rollover angle?
Yeah.
Well, it really depends. Yeah. You know, if you've got
how big of a heavy of a rooftop tent you got?
Yeah, I mean, did you put a 6-inch lift and a rooftop tent on it? Well, you've got a really high center of gravity, and your rollover potential is really high.
Yeah.
If you've got that Subaru, it's a pretty low center of gravity, and you're going to have to work a little bit harder to get to that rollover, but you still need to be aware of it.
I always think one of the first things I learned when I started off-roading is when you're on the trail, your initial thought is, I want to go not put my wheel on the rock, but I want to put the rock between my wheels, right? Like it's a dead animal on the road where you don't want to run over it. But in most cases, that's exactly the wrong thing because that rock is going to now hit something important under your vehicle as opposed to you going over it with your wheel and not doing any damage.
Yeah, it's a trade-off. I often describe it to folks as either walking the rocks or swimming through channels. And there may be a combination of those things because – yeah, you may want to be on top of a rock, but then if you go over it, you're going to clear all the other stuff that's going to be underneath it. So that's when we want to know what breakover angle is and where we have those high and low points so we can navigate that. And maybe it's that I want to swim around it with the front and I want to go over it with the rear. So, you know.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
It's funny, Land Rover back in the day used to do this thing where they would put the two pumpkins on one side.
And they
were always on, I think it was on... I'm sure I'm going to get this wrong. I have 50-50 chance. It was either on the passenger side and they were lined up.
Right.
Or it was on the driver's side.
Yeah.
So you knew the lowest part of your vehicle, which was the pumpkin, basically, or the pumpkins. And so you could know where they were so that you could avoid hitting them into big pointy rocks.
Well, it's one of the fun things when I teach a class. I love having a variety of vehicles. So we can talk about, you know, somebody who has an independent front suspension looks like they have this amazing amount of clearance on the front. Well, that's great until you compress it and it's variable. And then also, well, they still usually have a solid rear axle, so you still have that low point versus a Land Rover or an 80 series Land Cruiser or whatever. You know, even in my Land Cruiser, the rear differential is offset just a little bit, so it's not quite centered.
Yeah, so I'm going to just break into a little fun anecdote here.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. where we had to go rescue Nathan. And Nathan, and forgive me if I'm kind of throwing you under the bus here, but it did happen. It was kind of interesting. We had to go rescue Nathan on Onion Creek in Moab.
Okay.
From Colorado. So yeah. Nathan made the mistake that I often make, which is we had a Honda Ridgeline, which is a little pickup truck.
Yeah.
And the lowest, one of the lowest hanging fruit there is the oil pan.
Oh,
and we were going over Onion Creek in Moab trying to show how fun it is to go off-road. And Onion Creek, as you know, is this dirt road with like 50 different little creek crossings. Mm-hmm. And on video, it's really fun to see that water splash. And now keep in mind, for the most part, you don't want a water splash. It's not good for – but this is like – this is more of like – it's not like a true creek. It's just like a little – but – as is the way when you're off-roading, as is the way with me, Nathan managed to find like the only pointy rock on the whole trail.
We were talking about water crossings, right?
So he hit the splash, and that rock hit the oil pan, and he comes out of it, and we're like, oh, boy, this is not good. And I say we. I wasn't there. It was I think Tommy and Andre were there at the time. He poked a hole in the oil pan, and we managed to get it, you know, off the trail, but we weren't going any farther.
Right.
And Onion Creek is maybe 10 miles out of Moab.
Yeah, it's not far, but it's far when you're out there.
Yeah, and so then this long and convoluted process began where Andre drove all the way back to here, to Boulder, got Mr. Truck to get his trailer, and at midnight they drove back so that in the morning when Nathan woke up, they were there to winch up the truck and then drive it back. So this was like, 18 hours.
So you just out for a little fun trail run, and then 3 days later.
We're back to Boulder at the dealership. Yeah.
I mean, you just described what a lot of people experience, right? They decide they're going to go out for a day, and something happens, and then it's 3 days later, they're finally getting their vehicle back.
Yeah, and this is a Ridgeline. This is a pickup truck where you'd think that you'd be fine, you know, going over this. When I look at this table, I mean, the crossing is about as big as this table. It's not a deep creek. It's not a. It's just a little.
But
like
appearances can always be deceiving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. So let's take a quick break here and talk about our friends at Onyx. I just talked with Val, who is in charge of that. And one of the great things about off-roading is knowing where you're going and not getting lost.
essential piece of the puzzle.
So we'll be right back. Hey guys, I'm here with Val Zolak, who's the head of product at Onyx Off-Road. And Val, I really want to thank you for coming down to our studios. I don't know if you guys know this, but without sponsors like Onyx, we wouldn't be able to do this. So I'm very appreciative of the fact that you have come down. And in this interview, we're just going to talk about the app, kind of how it started, what it can do for you. But let's start with the beginning. All I know about the app is that it started as a hunting app, right? So kind of tell me about the beginnings of Onyx.
Yeah, Onyx, you're correct. Onyx started as a hunting app before there were apps. The Onyx founder, Eric, had a vision to connect private and public land ownership in Montana, and it actually started off as chips that you would put inside your standalone Garmin GPS devices. And so recognizing that from a hunting perspective, knowing where you stand is really important. Knowing what property you're on, what property is the animal that you're looking at on, and all of those regulations is, you know, a very unique value proposition that didn't exist in the mid-2000s. And so we started that, and then when the iPhone came out, and the App Store moved from being a bunch of chips to an app. And then in 2019, we had the idea that while this is really great for hunting, what if we added trail data to that app and focused on off-roading? So since 2019, we've had Onyx Off-Road, and then we've since moved into human-powered adventures with backcountry, from backcountry skiing, hiking, mountain biking, climbing. And now we have fish. Lakes in the Midwest from both.
Are you tracking fish?
We are not tracking fish, but we work with definitely the state agencies to get that data. And then we also trout routes is now our
trout
in our
routes.
Family.
I love that
as well. So you know, our apps are purpose built for the specific adventures that you're doing, and we try to awaken the adventure in everybody. So whatever your adventure is, we should hopefully have a product for that.
Yeah, you know, for me, when I first started off-roading, the thing that was always, I used to do triathlon, right? And triathlon is consistent with three sports, swim, bike, run. And there's always one that's the limiter, or the one that is going to slow you down, or the one that's going to keep you from getting into the sport. And in triathlon, it tends to be swimming, because most people, you know, aren't swimmers or haven't grown up swimming. And for me, with off-roading, it was always getting lost.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, knowing where you're at when you're in the some of our really big trail networks, you know, do you take that spur road? Where does that spur road go? And really being able to see where you are on the map is certainly one of the, you know, very clear things that we try and do. And then being able to download those maps and take them with you. When you're, you know, in the cool places we like to be, where there's not necessarily always cell service, you know, that's changing very rapidly at the moment. But we still feel like having that backup and having that map with you, you know, is certainly one of the very big benefits of having off-road.
And then the other thing that, you know, is a limiter beyond getting lost is knowing how difficult the trail is, because.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you've been doing it a lifetime and you've been on a lot of trails, you feel comfortable because you know what's coming. But for a lot of people, especially if you're starting out, or even if you've been in it for a while, you know, it's not like things get gradually hard, right? You're like, hey, this is great. Oh, my God, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
And Onyx does that for you. So kind of tell me and walk me through how the app works and how Onyx lets people know not only how not to get lost, but what's coming up and what makes the trail interesting or what makes it difficult or what is at the end of the trail. So let's kind of walk through all that.
Yeah, absolutely. So our product, we work with all of the different land managers across the United States, in Canada and in Baja as well. But today we'll just focus on kind of around where we are at the moment. So we work with all of those land managers to add their data to our map. So you always have the lines of kind of what you're looking at and what the road is. But we have trail guides that go out and run those trails for us. So being able to come in and say, Bounce School Road.
That's where Tommy is at right now. Running Plane Crash.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
So great one. You picked a good one.
Great. So we can see that this is a 4 out of 10 for the Onyx scale at the moment. And that's what it was when it was originally ran and put in the app. Now, as you were just saying, sometimes trail conditions change.
Oh, heck yeah.
And so being able to come in and also see trail reports. So we're able to have all of our customers come in, and when you run the trails that are rated by difficulty for us, you can also come in and you can say whether it was open, you know, what were the conditions like, was it muddy or wet. You can add your own photos. So what it really does is, as you were talking about, you can see a little bit more information than just what is that line on the map. You know, it might be that today you may have the most capable vehicle ever, but today you just want to go for a drive. You're not in the mood to go get recovered, you know, or a challenge. So knowing what you want to do, what you can do, and just having a little bit more information to me kind of gives me a little less anxiety going out there.
So yesterday we ran Ironclads. Is that in there? Can you look up Ironclads and
see what the
rating on that is? There you go. It's a lollipop. You found it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. A lollipop in that it's a kind of a lollipop if you run it right. You go around.
Yeah, exactly. So if we look at this trail.
Yep.
That's exactly what Roman's talking about. It's a it is a lollipop.
So what do you guys rate it at?
So it has been rated a 7 out of 10 as difficult.
That seems about right. Yeah.
And one of the cool things is that we give you description. So, you know, we're saying that it's a challenging out and back loop off of Bunce School Road Trail. So you've described it exactly as we did. And then we have different photos too. So being able to see, like, yeah, that's a washed out gully, you can see some rocks, some different snow. So snow also, you know, depending on when the trail guide ran it, can also have a huge impact. But being able to just see a little bit more information about that trail, being able to see the vehicle on the trail. So one of the things I like to do is I like to look at the types of vehicles that people have run the trail with so that I can just get a little bit more confidence in if I can take my Super Duty on it or not.
You have a Super Duty?
I do. We have a 21 350 Tremor.
That is badass, Val. I am impressed.
Yeah, we actually
do you camp out of it?
We do. Yeah, oh, we have a Hallmark camper that we put on it and
nice
Highway Products flatbed on it. So all of your content from the super Tremor way back in the day helped us.
Are you happy with it?
Well, yeah.
Did we do you justice?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, no, good. you guys actually helped us make that purchase.
Okay, good, decision, good. So, all right. And I think one of the things you would quickly realize with Ironclads is that trail is probably too narrow for a Super
Duty. Oh yeah, absolutely. So that's why I like to look at what vehicles were on those trails for me to help. To help us make that decision. We got lots of Colorado pinstripes on it. We use it all the time.
You're, like you said, you're head of product. So one of the cool things about Onyx that we found over the years is that you're always adding new features to it.
Yeah.
So how do you get those features, and how do people suggest them, or is it something that you get from personal experience where you're off-roading and you're like, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we can go fishing and find out where the best fishing spots are? Something like that?
Yeah, like all of those things.
Okay.
So one of the things that I really enjoy about my job is being able to go out and talk to customers. So when we go to events like Overland Expos, King of Hammers, or other events at off-road parks or things through the country, we get to go and talk to people, and they'll tell us what they like, what they don't like. Our apps are also purpose-built, so our team does off-road, and we go and do these things. And so we encourage our employees and really everybody to go out and use the app and then come back with suggestions. We have a great customer success team, and so when people call in and have questions, we get all of that feedback too. So my job is to combine all that great information together and then figure out, like, how do we take all the different pieces of feedback from all of our customers and say we could make this new feature and it would solve a really big problem for our customers, and we want to keep everybody happy.
Now, one of the great things about Onyx is that you can also use it even if you're out of cell service.
Mm-hmm.
So you could download the maps ahead of time to your phone and then basically never be lost, because even if you don't have cell service, for instance, on Ironclads, you're not going to have any cell service. There are like two spots because we do it so much, we know, but for the most part, you're not going to have cell service. So you can download it and then you can have it. But I'm wondering, you know, with kind of the advent of Starlink, with people having satellite internet service, is that changing the way, or is that something that your guys are taking into account for the way that people are using the app?
Yeah, it certainly is. I think one of the things that it allows people to do is have the ability to plan a little bit more when they get to camp, right? So you can look at it the next day and say, like, hey, maybe we want to go do this other trail network over here. And then I'll have the ability to, if I just want to have Starlink up at camp, I can then download those new maps and go forward with it. If you have it in motion, that's great too. But you need a really clear view of the sky. So I still like to have that backup plan.
If you're somewhere in the trees.
Exactly. Yeah, just making sure that that I have that information. So I just use it as kind of a backup and just a safety net to make sure that we have that running forward, and I don't have to worry about that tree cover, or if it's on the top of my car, low clearance. Ran into that last weekend. We had taken it off, but the mount that's on top of our vehicle has sustained some damage. So
I'm glad that you guys are using that thing.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you guys are interested, we have a discount code. I think it's 20%. Use TFL Off-Road.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that, you know, you can get and save some money on, especially if you're planning on going someplace new. We use it all the time because it's such a easy to use app. Is that something that you guys work so hard on? Because obviously there's, when you add functionality, it also kind of increases complexity. So one of your challenges, I suspect, must be how do you keep it simple and yet how do you add functionality to it?
Yeah, it definitely is. Mm. So that's the fun part and the hard part about my job is trying to make sure that we're crystal clear about what we are.
Plane crash. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, about what we're looking at the moment.
So what's plane crash rated? That's the trail that Tommy's running. He's doing a comparison right now as we speak, comparing the Bronco to the Wrangler.
Yeah, it says it's a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. The there's a little rock garden.
Yeah, so I'm sure our pictures probably state that, or they could just be of the plane.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so there it is. So, you know, a little bit of challenge. You can see that there's, you know, Jeeps and different side-by-sides running it. So we really try to also state, like, what type of vehicle you can take on which trail.
And let me ask you this. You brought up a really interesting point. So, like I said, I've been to Moab now, like, I think 5 times or 6 times in the last 2 months. And when I first started going to Moab, it was, like, dirt bikers. And I'm not just talking about Moab. I'm talking about off-roading in general. It was, like, dirt bikers and maybe some people in Jeeps. And then it kind of went into the Jeep world, but now, my gosh, it's all side-by-sides. I think I saw one Jeep for every 10 side-by-sides. When I say Jeep, I'm just referring to Broncos, right? Off-road vehicles.
Yeah.
And the one thing that side-by-sides allow you to do is to go farther, deeper, faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you seeing that reflected in the way that people are using the app where, you know, people are now on side-by-sides. I'll give you an example. There's a pretty famous trail in Moab called Top of the World.
Mm-hmm.
It's you go over the Dewey Bridge, right? And then you go up this relatively steep hill, and then you go over this outlook, which is on a ridge, and then there's like a 1,000-foot drop, and people park their vehicles on top. And the first time I did it with a group ride with Best Top, and there were like 20 Jeeps. And I think it took probably 5 hours to do that trail.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next time I did it in a side-by-side, and I think I was up and down in about 25 minutes. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah. No, it's definitely that's definitely something that we get feedback on a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the trails in Moab, we had run with 4x4s. So when we do say the total time, it probably will be that.
Referred to as a off-road vehicle, not as a side-by-side.
Yeah. And but being able to go and do them quicker means that you can do more trails.
You can. You can also, you know, get yourself into a lot more trouble because you can get much farther in. You know, there you go. There's the classic picture from Top of the World.
Yeah. I think the notion of being able to get much farther in and then figuring out how to get back, one of the things that Onyx is really good for, right? It's a map, but also you have the ability to track yourself. So we're not moving here, but I can hit record a track. And then I'll know exactly, it'll follow me and leave little breadcrumbs.
Wonderful.
And then I will know exactly how I got in. And if I'm lost, I can always follow that track back out. On a side-by-side, it'll show up on your phone. If you have a vehicle that has an in-dash experience with CarPlay or Android Auto, that track will show up there too, so that you can focus on driving and all the fun obstacles and then just kind of have your dot follow that line.
Now, people might be wondering, the reason I brought up side-by-sides before we get to the next question is because, you know, there's always this new wave of people discovering the beauty of the American West. And I mean that because in a lot of places I've been to in the world, there is no off-roading.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Europe, I don't know where you're going to go off-road because the public land just doesn't exist. It's already been sold and fenced and, you know, but here in the American West, we're very blessed to have this incredible network of off-roading. But there, you know, people are rediscovering it, and I'm noticing with side by sides, it's a whole new crop of people. It's people, you know, I mean, let's face it. If you're a Jeeper or a Bronco type or an off roader, you tend to be one of the grizzly old veterans like me. You know, oh yeah, I remember when we used to roll on 33s. But a lot of the people in the side by side world, I think, are new to the outdoor world, and this has opened up a whole new way for them to experience it. And so I think, especially for something like Onyx Off-Road, this is a great app for them because it gives them the confidence of being able to go off-roading and knowing how difficult it's going to be and knowing where they're at. And I think that is incredible.
Yeah. Being able to go farther and have that confidence is one of my favorite things about it. In addition to that, you know, a lot of people go off-roading and use our national forest systems and BLM land to do things. Off-roading is part of the adventure. And they may also, you know, go out for a long weekend and want to find a cool place to camp. So one of the really cool things that Onyx has added to the product this month is we've aggregated all of the data from the U.S. Forest Service motor vehicle use maps and have now highlighted all of the trails that allow motorized dispersed camping.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So you don't have to go and find all of those individual PDFs or go find an open ranger station. They're all right here. So you don't have to hunt for those little dots. Anything that if you turn on that layer with the dispersed camping layer, right now it's focused just on national forests, but you're able to see all the different places that you're legally allowed to be. Because, you know, people doing lots of things in our national forests, you know, with resourcing and capacity issues at the moment, being able to make sure that you're staying within the allowed activities is really important because that's what's going to keep everything open for us.
And for instance, like I love camping. Once again, I'm going to Moab just because we go there a lot, but I love doing the White Rim Trail, and there are designated camping spots, mm-hmm. but you have to get reservations for them.
You do, yes.
So will this tell you? Will it tell you that you have to, you know, go and get the reservation as well?
Some of them do. Yeah. If we have that information about the trail, yes.
Yeah. So it'll let you know. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it'll let you know that if you look at White Rim and look at our description, it will talk about no services available and that you have to get permits.
So you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're working through the National Forest at the moment with the rest of this camping layer, and then we'll move on to what the BLM regulations, and White Rim's in the national park, right? So that has different regulations than if you were just to go camp off of Potash Road.
There are so many layers.
There are, and that's one of the also the really great things about Onyx is being able to know who owns the land. Or who manages the land that you're on. So not only from a private land ownership perspective, which you can get in our Elite product, but also just knowing, hey, this trail is on Pike National Forest. So understanding those different regulations.
All right, so if you want to get Onyx, how much is it a month and how do you sign up for it?
We have basically yearly products mm-hmm. as well. So it's $35 a year for premium,
okay.
$100 a year for Elite.
That is a bargain.
It is a bargain.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about how much a tank of gas costs you,
yeah.
You know, being able to spend $35 and with your discount, you know, it's even less than that. So TFL Off-Road, 20% off. Being able to
and what does Elite that get you versus the regular
yeah market? So Elite will get you our private land ownership information. So if you're ever curious as to who owns that land you're driving through,
if you're gonna get shot or not, I'm just joking.
it is important to know. So premium will tell you if you're on private or public, yeah. but Elite will tell you who owns those individual okay. private parcels. Elite will also give you the ability to have recent imagery. So we were chatting about how some of these roads are still snow covered.
Uh-huh.
So being able to come in and see that in the high country, you know, there is still snow on those.
And how do you get that info? So let's say you want to do Webster Pass, right?
Yeah.
Which is probably snow covered because there's a big snow drift. How do you figure out if there's snow on it or not?
Yeah. So you would come into where our base maps are and select recent imagery.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll just look at the most recent we have, which is the last 2 weeks in May,
okay.
and then I'd be able to find, so this is Boreas Pass, but okay. similar thing where you can come in and you can see that there might be a snowdrift here, or at least 2 weeks ago.
And this is crowdsourced?
No, this is from satellite imagery. Oh, so we pay a satellite provider.
Oh, wow, that's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so you can actually see
so
what was on the ground. We do have both.
You have yes. crowdsourced and...
Yeah,
and,
exactly. And. So I could also go into Boreas and it would say that it was open. But knowing what's on the ground, I think is also really helpful.
By the way, a great motorcycle trail or bicycle trail, Boreas, if you don't want to, you know, have to do a lot of hardcore off-roading, because
yeah.
it's basically a dirt road. And then at the top, there's that really cool old train station hub. So that's, if you want to go someplace that's off the beaten path and you're in Breckenridge, Boreas Pass is wonderful.
Yeah. It's an amazing,
I used
view.
To, when my mom was still alive, we used to go mushroom hunting up there for all of you Eastern European types.
There's
a lot of mushrooms up there. Not now, but in the summer.
We have that's a lot of people use Onyx Hunt for mushroom hunting. Yeah, looking at the different vegetation layers that we have. Yeah,
it's becoming a thing.
It is.
All right, before we wrap this up, you got to tell me about what was the fish one called?
Fish.
Where you just did a fish app, or you can use it for finding fish. How does that work?
Yeah, so Onyx Fish
is
really looking at flat water.
All right.
So it's available in Midwestern states at the moment.
Yeah, so musky fishing up in Hayward, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So would this help me catch more muskies? Or find lakes that have muskies.
It would help you find lakes that have muskies.
Okay,
how
that works.
You would need the fish app. But you would look at fish and say, I'm looking for muskies, and I want to go at these different times, and it will help you zoom into the lakes in which you would have a high probability of finding muskie.
So like... Yeah, obviously Minnesota, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Northern,
Minnesota, Wisconsin, yeah. Michigan.
Yeah,
we just That's did cool. North Dakota
yeah.
As well. And so as we get more state data, we'll be continuing that.
And any other new things you're working on that you can give us a hint about before we wrap this up?
Dispersed camping was really one of the big ones for this year. I will say outside of the app, as we've been kind of talking about people going and looking at and riding different trails. Keeping those open is really important. And so when you go in and submit a trail report, being able to state what type of conditions the road was in is really helpful to others. But Onyx is also working with a trail revival project. So if you go on our website, search for Onyx Trail Revival, we're partnering with Toyota right now and 4x4 clubs and other conservation groups to go out and we'll do trail cleanups. So it's something that throughout the summer we'll be doing across the United States, and it's really been cool to see the impact. We just did one out in Eagle 2 weekends ago, so that was really fun to see.
And last question, if for some reason a trail gets closed, mm-hmm. Because of either natural things like floods or, washouts or because of whatever, human activity, will it also come up for the most part on the app?
We try to keep up with the legal regulations of what's happening. Our app will show you basically seasonal closures at the moment. So if we know that the Forest Service only opens certain roads, starting June 15th, which is very common around Colorado, we have that information. But looking at trail reports and seeing if somebody has noted that the trail is temporarily closed for something, that those will show up in trail reports as well.
Well, there you have it—a comprehensive look at all things off-road. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I really appreciate you coming down here,
yeah.
and sharing with us the app. And once again, if you guys are interested, TFL Off-Road, 20% discount on $35 is probably the best money you're going to spend for the most adventures you can have. All right,
awesome.
let's get back to the regular podcast. All right, well, we left off talking about the Ridgeline.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about cars and trucks. Now,
this is where you know more than me.
No, you know just as much as I do.
I know concepts of cars and trucks.
But one of the things, of course, that like more serious off-roaders have, and now I'm talking about, the off-road versions of pickup trucks like the Tremor or the Raptor.
Yeah.
If we're talking Ford, the... Trail Boss, if we're talking GM, the Rebel, if we're talking, or TRX, if we're talking Ram, and of course Wrangler, Bronco, is they have underbody protection.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of trails where you just drag the bottom of the vehicle.
Pick a bad line, yes.
Yes. Yes. Or even sometimes you pick the right line.
Yeah, sometimes it's inevitable.
It's
inevitable.
We just did that going up Plane Crash. Plane Crash is this trail where it's gotten really gnarly, and even on standard Wrangler on 33s, we were dragging the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
So it depends how serious you want to get, and I kind of put vehicles into soft roader versus off roader, and what determines that is usually whether they have a low range transfer case.
Yeah, when we talk about it, we usually think in terms of a high clearance four-wheel drive vehicle is a vehicle that has a little bit more clearance and has a two-speed transfer case where they can put it into a low range where they have control.
And what the low range does is it allows you to basically crawl.
Yeah. So you get a much more moderated amount of torque going to the wheels at low speed so that you can still have rolling friction while you're moving the weight of the vehicle.
So in the Toyota world, we'd be looking at 4Runners, we'd be looking at Land Cruisers, we'd be looking at Tacomas, Tundras.
Yeah.
But just because you have a low range doesn't necessarily mean that you're good at off-roading. So this is Tommy and our new Bronco Everglades. He's on 35s. And this is a vehicle, you know, that comes from the factory ready to go and do some serious off-roading. Now, the one thing we just discovered about this is 33s are the new whatever the hell the old ones were, 30s and 35s are the new 33s. But the problem is, like you were talking about, once you get into something with 35s, you raise the center of gravity.
Yes, you do.
And you make it much more tippy.
There's a balance between, you know, clearance and center of gravity. And, you know, when you're talking about putting a lift on a vehicle, you know, you're accommodating the size of the tire and you're trying to provide some articulation so that you can actually reach down and keep in contact with the road. But that has its trade-offs because once you raise that center of gravity, that tippiness can be your enemy.
Yeah. So what do you tell people is, like, do you recommend certain off-roaders when they call you, or do you just work with them with whatever they have?
Usually I don't get a lot of calls from people who ask, what should I buy?
Okay. So they're asking you, I bought it and I want to go off-roading.
Mostly it's, I have this vehicle or I've had this vehicle, and I get a lot of new folks who, in particular, just moved to Colorado. They haven't lived someplace that have the trail access that we have here. So they bought a four-wheel drive vehicle and they want to go learn how to drive it, in particular because they want to access some of the remote country we have here. And so we have a bunch of wonderful four-wheel drive trails, so they don't know what the buttons do. Probably about half my students have never put it in 4-low. They don't know about area down tires. They don't know what any of the buttons do. They don't know about brake throttle modulation and how to do nice steady throttle to avoid wheel spin or why that's bad.
All right, let's answer those questions. Yeah. If you're out there on your brand new, let's start with the basic one. Yeah. What is airing down and why do you do it?
Yeah, so airing down does several things. So, you know, usually we're looking at improving traction. So when we're driving down the highway, we want less rolling friction because that's how we get good fuel economy. When we go off-road, we want to have better traction. We also get terrible fuel economy, but that's not why we buy these vehicles. So you increase the amount of contact that tire has with the road or rocks, and it conforms better, so you maintain traction. So that's sort of the number one reason. That's also good for the trail, because one thing we don't want to do on the trail is spin wheels, because we're damaging it unnecessarily, in addition to not having control where we're going. It also makes it more comfortable for you. You know, driving down the road, suspensions only do so much off-road, so a little bit of air out of the tires adds a little bit more cushion to the ride.
Also lowers your approach, departure, brake.
So there's a trade-off there, right? Yeah. Right. But it's also really good for the rest of your suspension and driveline components, because you're reducing the amount of shock load that they're seeing when you're driving on the road, especially for on washboard and stuff like that. The trade-off is that you are, in fact, you know, when you air down that tire, you're going to lose a little bit of clearance. That's where it really depends on the size, weight of the vehicle, the size and weight of the tire, how much you're going to need to air down.
And how much do you recommend airing down? Is there a number? So normally, if you're not on a heavy-duty truck where the tires are on like 60 PSI, usually a car, or in this case, a Bronco, is at like 30-ish?
Yeah. So there's a couple of good recommendations. Yeah. So number one, if you air down to about 20 PSI, that gives you some options. It will give you a little bit more of that traction that we're talking about.
Oh, you can see it hitting.
I see that right there.
Yeah, look at that.
Yep, yep. Had to get that rear tire up on the rock.
Yep,
those rear shock mounts are a common scraping point. So where were we? Airing down.
Yeah, so you said you go to
and clearance.
20.
Yeah, so airing down to 20 will give you enough of that, you know, flexibility in the tire to give you a little bit more traction. But it's also enough tire pressure that if you, for some reason, didn't have a way to air up, you could still drive for short distances on highway. Not recommended to go very far, very fast, but you still could. Another version of that is to air down to half whatever your regular highway PSI is.
This is plane crash, by the way.
I haven't been up there in a while. Looks like it's fun.
It's getting a little.
Well, all the trails around here I've watched over the last 30 years have changed their character pretty dramatically.
And now, if you go too far, you could also blow out a bead.
You could. Yeah. So,
that's when you want bead locks, but that's really advanced.
That's really for advanced stuff. You're also worried about pinching tires. You know, there's some debate about whether airing down is good or bad for the puncture resistance of a tire. One theory is that if you're going over sharp rocks, it will conform rather than, you know, succumbing to the jagged edge.
Yep.
But what I've also seen, in particular with the sidewalls, because they're pressed out and they're already stressed pretty hard at the bottom of the tire, the little side gash is a little bit more likely in some circumstances.
But you got to go pretty low to get
that. Got to go pretty low to get that way. And
so
also,
how far down would you go? I wouldn't go more than maybe like 15 personally.
Yeah, 15 is kind of, I have the most traction I'm going to get without putting myself in a position where I'm going to pop a bead and all that kind of stuff.
And then the downside to airing down, of course, is that you got to air back up.
Yeah, you do.
Because you don't want to be on the road on 15. It gets very squirrely.
Well, it gets squirrely, and the biggest concern is that your tires get hot enough that the sidewalls will literally blow out.
Yeah.
So we don't like that.
So if you're going to air down, when you get back on the road, on pavement, you got to air back up.
The recommendation is always air back up. If you need to go a short distance, that's probably okay. I usually tell people don't go more than 50 miles an hour for more than 50 miles.
All right. So let's keep going. So the other thing you talked about three things. So I want to hit all three of them. The other thing you talked about are all the buttons, levers.
Yeah.
So what do they do? Well, let's start with like low range, and then we'll talk about traction, different like off-road modes. Let's start with the low range though.
Okay. So, I mean, we have a bunch of different vehicle configurations out there, but kind of the traditional version is you've got a two-wheel drive vehicle that's got a part-time transfer case, and that might shift you from too high, so you're just putting power to the rear, sometimes to the front, but mostly to the rear, and you can shift into four high, and you can usually do that driving on the highway up to 50 miles an hour or something like that. So you get a little bit, you engage the front drivetrain, and you get a little more traction.
So you're going from two-wheel drive to four-wheel drive.
To four-wheel drive, exactly.
And we're not talking about all-wheel drive. Usually the difference in all-wheel drive
there's some rabbit holes to go there.
Right, we won't go the rabbit holes. And the reason you might want to be sitting in a truck in two high versus four high is because only sending power to two rear wheels is better on fuel economy.
Yep.
So you're going to get a little better fuel economy, and B, you can start crabbing in a four wheel drive, four high. You can.
Yeah, it depends on the system, but your typical part time, you don't want to be in that unless you need to be. Yeah.
So let's say you're in two high, you come up to the trail and it's nothing hard. Yeah. That's usually when you want to put it in four high. You want four wheel drive.
And I recommend people do that because we talked about tire spinning being bad. Mm-hmm. So if you're driving and, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I can do this trail in two wheel drive. And it's like, well, that's great, but you're probably spinning your tires unnecessarily and you're actually tearing up the trail. So
here's something I learned a long time ago, and I see people making this mistake all the time. Mm-hmm. And you tell me if I'm right about this. It's like they wait until they're stuck to go to the next thing.
This is true.
Yes.
This is true. And it is it's a good teaching moment, but I try to teach ahead of that, which is plan ahead.
Yeah.
Be two steps ahead of whatever might happen. So if you know that you're going to go into a section of the trail, you need to be in four-wheel drive, put it in four-wheel drive. If you need to be in four-low, put it in four-low. If you're going to tackle an obstacle and you know that you're going to need to use one of the buttons we're going to talk about, preemptively engage those because often it's a little too late. And sometimes, depending on the position of your vehicle or, you know, how dynamically you have that suspension stretched out, you can't put it in four-wheel drive or your buttons are using your buttons is too late. So,
the way it was told to me, Eric, was like a dope slap, right? The idea is not to get stuck.
This is true. So caveat with that, I do on occasion go out with some friends and have a good time, and the objective is to get stuck.
Oh, sure, but that's
a whole different thing.
And you're
that's
with
a
whole buddies.
Different thing. And the intent is let's go practice our skills or whatever that might be.
Or winter wheeling where you always get stuck.
Yes, winter wheeling is the entire point of it. Absolutely. And it's gorgeous up there in the wintertime, I got to say.
So ever since I've been given that dope slap, I've always kind of thought to myself, let's just engage everything right away.
Not everything.
Well, not everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever is needed at that
moment.
Whatever's
needed at that moment. Yes. I concur.
Okay, so now we're on the trail. We're in four high, and all of a sudden it starts to get a little bit more gnarly.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit more rocky. You're starting to maybe go up a hill or down a hill. This is when you engage four low. Right?
Yeah, so you might hear your engine bogging down. You can tell that you're getting a little bit of wheel slip. You're down below 25 miles an hour. You want to have a little bit more control. So what folks usually don't know, especially new folks, is that you really need to stop your vehicle, put it in neutral, and then shift.
You can't do that on the fly.
No. Well, there's a few vehicles that you can, but most of them don't. And so stop, put your transmission in neutral, either push the button, turn the dial, shift the lever. You'll usually have an indicator on the dash. If it's flashing at you, that means you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for some unbeknownst reason, if you've own a Toyota. Mm-hmm. They have these little tiny lights.
They're really tiny, yes. They're usually behind the steering wheel, so you got to look for them. Yes. And yes, I totally agree. Yes, they're not obvious at all.
They're like 2 millimeters.
Yeah. Well, and also flashing for a lot of people is an indication that it's doing it right, and it's actually telling you you're doing it wrong. And yeah,
if it's solid, then you're locked.
Then you're locked, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So now you put a neutral, and it depends on the vehicle, like Jeep, for all you guys who have Jeeps, they have this big lever, right, that you kind of pull down.
Toyotas, too. Some of the older ones. Yeah.
Some of the older ones. Yeah. Now, Ford and the newer one and the Bronco we were looking at, they have something called GOAT mode, which stands for goes over any terrain.
Yes.
And that's very smart. So you spin a little rotary dial, and you, let's say you put it in rock crawl mode, and it, all of a sudden when you do that, it does everything else for you. It so you don't have to.
Chooses all the tools for you. Yeah.
It does, except airing it down.
That's coming, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah. But any way you get there, you want to be now in four low.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you're done.
No. Well, I mean, A, we have vehicle control that goes after that because you're still driving your vehicle. But yeah, we have all kinds of other buttons that we may or may not use.
So let's talk about the other buttons.
Yeah. So kind of the preeminent kind of older button was lockers. So it was sort of the first thing that came out. And, you know, there's selectable lockers that you can turn on or turn off. There are always on lockers like lunchbox lockers, which you're not really driving on pavement. But those selectable lockers, you got to be a little bit careful with because they literally are locking your differential, meaning those wheels are always turned at the same rate. And that's great when you're climbing over an obstacle so you avoid that one wheel spin. The downside is that, you know, already in four-wheel drive, you're going to feel that wheel cheat when you're going around a corner because those wheels aren't able to turn at differential rates. And you don't want to do that any longer than necessary.
Well, it tears up the vehicle and the trail.
Yeah, well, and you're putting significant stress on your drivetrain unnecessarily, especially on really high traction surfaces. I've had several students who have come to my class, experienced off-roaders, and their habit has been put it in four low, lock, and they just lock it up and they drive around all day that way.
Yeah, not good.
Not good.
Don't do that. It makes for bad car control or Jeep control.
All kinds of things, and those are sadly some of the folks that I also, at the end of the day, they can't turn that stuff off because they've welded something or broken something. So.
And serious off-roaders either have a center locker, which a lot of vehicles have, even soft-roaders have, but then if you get very serious, can have a rear and a front locker.
Yeah.
So basically with all three locked, when you lock the middle one, then you're sending 50% of the power to the front and 50% to the back, but you still have four wheels. And so basically when you lock the middle one, you're still in two-wheel drive essentially.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're only getting one.
Or occasionally one-wheel drive, right. depending on.
And then if you lock the rear, now you're in three-wheel drive. If you lock the front, then you're in true four-wheel drive where all four wheels are actually providing traction.
Yeah.
So those are the buttons. Learn them.
Yeah.
Know what they do because they're important.
Yeah.
And they're depending on the vehicle, they can be a pain in the butt or they can be super easy to engage.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to do them in the right order. Like you usually can't lock the front without locking the rear.
Right. And they take a second to engage. You're literally taking gears and meshing them, so you need to have a little planning for that. And if you're already in the middle of an obstacle, that can be really entertaining.
And especially Toyotas, sometimes you get a little bang or a clank. It sounds terrible.
I have not had that experience.
But it happens.
But it does happen. Usually you're just getting a click. Yeah. And you can hear it and you can feel it when it locks in.
Yeah.
But that's part of that planning ahead, right? If you're on a nice flat surface and you engage that locker and roll forward just a few feet, you'll get that click and then you start climbing your obstacle.
All right. And the third thing you talked about, let's talk about that, is throttle and brake control or both at the same time.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that.
Yeah. So it's a little bit frustrating for me, I'll be honest, because most new vehicles have a throttle disconnect. If you touch the brake, it disconnects throttle. But if you don't have that wonderful technology, we like to work our brakes and our throttle. At least I like to teach people to work their brake and their throttle at the same time. And the reason you're doing that is you're two-footing it. Yeah. So left foot braking, brake throttle modulation, a few different ways to talk about that. But it allows you to provide a little bit of tension to the system, and it's kind of poor man's traction control. So we didn't really talk about A-Track or some of the traction control systems.
I was leaving that for next.
That's okay.
That's coming next.
We can go there next.
Yeah.
But if you don't have those, when you're applying a little bit of brake and then you're driving through your brakes, you're preventing wheel spin. And you're putting tension in the drive system, and it gives you just a little bit more control. In addition, when you're going over obstacles, whether it's up or over or down, instead of trying to climb an obstacle with just the throttle, where inevitably you climb it and then you get wheel spin because the throttle is uncontrolled, or going down an obstacle where you're relying on the brakes so you drop really dramatically, or just navigating terrain, so you're getting individual wheel spin. When you're modulating that brake and that throttle, you get a really nice, smooth ride, and you have rolling friction over all of those obstacles.
Yeah, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make who are new to off-road is kind of, I call it the stop-start technique, right? It's always like...
on or off.
On or off, on or off.
Yeah.
And sometimes, oftentimes, you need a little bit of momentum to get over things.
Yeah.
And so you're not, you think you're being safe, but you're actually not.
Right. Especially if you're just relying on throttle or just relying on brakes, you end up with too much throttle and you're hitting things harder than you want to and you're bouncing and you lose control that way. Or you stab your brakes and you skid. And when wheels are spinning or wheels are skidding, you don't have traction.
I was just on this Father's Day drive with my buddies when we were in sports cars and we were kind of doing a spirited drive up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. And you see the same thing actually on road, which is same kind of idea. Like people will be hitting a corner and then they figure out that they're going too fast in the middle of the corner. They actually apply the brake, which completely debalances the car.
Right.
On the old Porsches, you used to get snap oversteer, right? But it's the same idea.
Yeah, you see that dynamic shift in load, that's destabilizing.
Yeah, and the same thing happens off-road.
Yes.
Where you're shifting the weight to the wrong part. So let's say you're coming down a hill and you see an obstacle and you hit the brakes, all of a sudden all that weight of that vehicle is going to go forward and you're going to hit that obstacle really hard.
Yeah, there's an infamous little ledge on Black Bear Pass. In particular for IFS folks, it's this weird angle.
Independent front suspension.
Yeah, and you need to roll over it nice and easy, but what people don't realize is that it's a little bit more of a drop than they expect. And so they stab their brake, and as a result, they shift all the load right onto that front tire
and boom.
Yep. And we get to have a fun day.
Yep. recovering that one.
Recovering that one, yes. We've done it a few times.
And then let's talk about the different forms of off-road crawl control. Let's call it that. Because every company has its own version of that.
Yeah, most of them are, they're based on some sort of brake management system, right? So back in the day, before ABS, you had to pump your brakes, then we came up with ABS, and it uses sensors to modulate the brakes to keep the wheels turning. So now we have traction control devices that modulate the brakes to keep them from spinning.
It's a button too.
Yeah. And there's lots of versions of those. So you may have, a BSD in your Jeep. You may have A-Track in your Toyota. You may have crawl control that has different settings. But all of those are in different speeds, right? And they can be everything from all it does is sense wheel spin and stops the wheels from spinning, like A-Track. Or those crawl control systems have a really funky algorithm. And when you set it to whatever terrain you're on, it's been trained to use that algorithm to modulate the brakes and the throttle to get you through whatever you're driving on. And like you said, some of them are you set the speed, and all you really need to do is drive. You're not working the brakes or the throttle at
all. So
do
you teach people how to use those as well? Is that one of the things you do?
I do.
Or do you just say, hey, learn it manually and then...
I try to get people to learn how to do it without those because those things can fail.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, they defeat themselves.
Yes.
So they're great in most circumstances.
Until they're not.
And then it's not actually helping you. You need to turn that off. But then you need to understand how to drive your vehicle and use that brake and throttle appropriately. So I start with not using those, but always provide the opportunity that, okay, we're in a situation now where let's check out what a locker does so you can see what that does. Let's turn on the crawl control and see how that works. And you get a good sense of, oh, well, that's too fast or that's too slow or I want to have more control. And I would argue that the driver has more control than those buttons.
The other thing I found is sometimes individuals have different varying amounts of mechanical sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like when I was a little kid, I could never break my toys.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of almost physically hurt me. But I had a friend, Ken Walker, who would like take two Hot Wheels and just go bam, 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 simulating car accidents. Uh-huh. And you see the same thing out on the trail.
Yeah.
Where some people just don't understand that, or maybe I shouldn't say don't understand. I think to them they feel like the vehicle is built to take this bashing, and so they bash it pretty hard.
Right.
But I'm always the kind where if you start bashing things or if you start skidding over things, I just start to really worry.
Yeah, well, so when I was teaching law enforcement, we always talked about, smooth is fast, right? So if you're going smooth, it may seem like you're going slow.
Yeah.
Because slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Yeah.
So if you feel like you're going a little slow, but you're going smooth, eventually that turns into you going faster and faster. That's on-road driving, but off-road driving is similar, only different, right? So it's slow is smooth and smooth is traction. And that traction is what you're looking for. And when you're going too fast, you're bouncing tires, you're bouncing off of obstacles or into obstacles, you're lifting wheels unnecessarily. And so part of that mechanical sympathy, we talked about seating position, right? I see people all the time, because they're not seated properly in the vehicle, they're perched.
Oh.
And so they're literally perched on their butt, but they've got their back off and they're trying to look out and they're not feeling the vehicle.
Mm.
So part of that mechanical sympathy comes from being seated all the way in your vehicle so you can feel how it's moving and feel where those angles are. And we talked also about, being familiar with where your tires are. So you know that, oh, in just a second, I'm going to feel my rear tire lift. So all of that, I sometimes talk about driving from the seat of your pants or driving from your butt. You can really feel what your vehicle's doing if you're seated properly.
Now, we're kind of focusing on Colorado off-roading, but there is a lot of other different kinds of off-roading.
Oh, yeah.
There's mud bogging, there's sand.
Yes.
And what we're talking about, let's just be very clear, the techniques we're talking about here are mainly for rock crawling.
Yeah, for the narrow shelf road rock crawling stuff we have in Colorado.
Yeah, like you probably don't want wheel spin, but there are situations where you do want wheel spin.
Yeah. When you're talking about driving through mud, you actually want your wheels to spin a little bit because that's how you're kicking the stuff out from between the voids in your tires, and that's how you get more traction. So you want a little bit of wheel spin, a little bit of momentum, and same in sand, depending.
Now, let's talk about what I think is the most important thing, and that is tire choice. Because it's the part that touches the ground.
Yes.
What do you recommend? Do you recommend a tire, or what do you tell people about the tire they should or shouldn't use off-road?
Tires is such a personal choice.
It is a personal choice. Yes, it is.
So,
it's very personal.
Yeah. So it is always...
We could just talk about...
We really could. Mud
terrains. We could talk about all terrains.
Very long, long topics.
Soft terrain.
It is all very use case based. So what are you going to use your vehicle for primarily, right? Because a lot of people, they're recreational off-roaders and they're literally like, well, once a month, I want to go do a dirt road. Okay, what do you need to do that? You could do that primarily with your all-season tires. You might want to get a slightly more robust one because you might actually want to air down a little bit. But with most of those all-season tires, they're not built to be durable and they're not built to have a durable sidewall for airing down and things like that. So, we move up through all terrain and we've got mud terrain and in between we've got our RTs, whatever those are, kind of the hybrids in between. I personally have evolved from, so back in the day, the only really durable tires you could get were mud terrain tires. That was the thing back in the 2000s. And so these are
big knobby.
Big knobby, big voids.
Yeah.
And
they're meant for self-cleaning. So if you're in a mud bog, they throw off mud.
And they work pretty well when you're crawling rocks because you've got those big edges to grab onto. So that's pretty good.
But they're horrible in snow.
They're terrible on the road.
Yeah.
They're noisy.
They're loud, yeah.
They're bad in rain. So all kinds of reasons why they're not great for kind of everyday stuff or all season type of stuff. So now that we have a lot more options out there, a good all-terrain tire is going to serve most people really well.
So look at an AT.
Look at an AT. And, if you start doing, more gnarly stuff, well, you might need a more gnarly tire. That said, a lot of the ATs out there are pretty gnarly tires. So it's a pretty good combination of I can drive on the road, I can drive in rain, I can drive in the snow, and I can also air down and drive on some rocky trails pretty safely.
And they now do make ATs that are snow rated, even though a lot of that is marketing. So the three snow peak rating, if you actually Google it, basically it is based on how quickly you can accelerate. It has nothing to do with braking or, more importantly, turning.
Yeah.
which is nice.
There's a huge difference between a really good snow tire and an AT that is rated for it.
Yeah, three peaks still rated.
Just because of the siping and the compound and, whether or not it maintains its softness at cold temperatures and all that good stuff. So something's better than nothing. I really like mine because they're rated for snow and they're really good off-road. So it's always a compromise.
Yeah.
There's not a tire for everything.
And then the other thing I think you need to do when you're kind of off-roading, besides airing down, is on this, I think we're looking at the Hummer EV here that he's got up on the screen.
Yeah, is that Red Cone?
Yeah, I think that's Red Cone.
Coming down off Red Cone, yeah.
Yeah, that is a vehicle that has air suspension. We really haven't talked about that.
Interesting.
So let's talk about air suspension, which allows you to actually lift a vehicle. But everything off-road has an upside and a downside, right?
Yeah.
There's always compromises.
Yeah.
So when you have air suspension, you can lift a vehicle. And a lot of vehicles now have air suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Range Rovers, Land Rovers have air suspension.
Yep.
Cybertruck air suspension, Hummer EV air suspension, but it's kind of like being on tippy toes.
Yeah, well, and a lot
so
of
you lose suspension travel,
and they have a hydraulic version of it too. So
yes,
Lexus, Land Cruiser, and Rivian. So yeah, you gain lift, but you lose articulation, which is always the balance when you're doing some sort of suspension modification, right? So my old Land Cruiser has torsion bars, which are terrible for options for suspension, and which also means that if you crank up those torsion bars for clearance, you have no articulation at all. And articulation is what allows you to have your tires reach down and grab the ground. So a bit of a trade-off there.
There's two other things I want to hit before we run out of time. So in this video, we went up Redcone in the Hummer EV, and we got to a steep part after the gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. And it was, in fact, and I don't want to get into the specifics of like mechanical lockers and electronic lockers. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But weight.
Oh, yeah.
Weight is so important.
It is.
Like we were talking about with, you know, all the stuff that you have in your vehicle. This thing, 9,400 pounds.
That's heavy.
We got to a point where instead of, we were dirt road, very steep, mm-hmm. and instead of going up, it just dug four holes.
It succumbed to gravity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And gravity goes straight down, not at an angle. So, yeah.
So just be aware that the more stuff that you put on an in.
Well, I know that's part of the conversation that we have at the beginning when we're doing vehicle evaluations is like, so where do we have weight and how much do we have? And when I teach recovery classes, you always need to have a baseline for how much you're moving. And so everybody takes their vehicle and it's got a gross vehicle weight rating. And then they put steel bumpers on the front and the rear and sliders and armor and rooftop tents and their family and the dogs in the truck. They're usually way over that gross vehicle weight rating. The truck we're going to go get this afternoon is an 8,000 pounds. I think it's a Chevy 2500 or something like that.
Where is it stuck?
Old Flowers Road. So we'll be up there this afternoon.
You can have an interesting afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure as a recovery, we're kind of running out of time.
That's okay. We can chat about that some other time.
We'll do another whole episode on recovery.
Yeah.
Because I think that's even more fun in some ways. But the heavier a thing is, the harder it is to recover.
Yeah.
The more expertise I think you actually need to go off-roading.
Yeah, definitely.
So if I were starting off-roading, I certainly wouldn't start in a large pickup truck. I would say the sweet spot is like, if you're new to it, you know, get yourself a soft rotor. If you want, the problem with soft rotors is they don't have low range, and it's gonna you're gonna run out of equipment before you run out of time and talent.
Right.
So get yourself something that's relatively small. But let's wrap up with two other things: independent suspension versus solid axle. So Jeep versus Toyota.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were talking about articulation.
Right. So with
and then sway bar disconnect, we'll kind of throw.
We can throw that in there too,
because that's a button as well.
So you know, independent front suspension is great for on highway.
Yeah.
The whole idea is that you know it gives you that nice smooth ride up front. You know, whereas a solid axle, it's connected, so it doesn't want to be as supple on the road, and those two wheels want to stay connected to each other. That's why it's great when you're driving on the highway, when you get off-road.
You want the tires touching
the
ground.
You want the tires touching the ground and that independent front suspension. Well,
lets you hang up one in the air.
Yeah, exactly. So we have the famous you know, independent front suspension or the Toyota Wave, right?
yes.
And the Wave is even more dramatic in the rear when you're going down something and you get that rear end that sticks up. There's a trade-off there in terms of articulation and stability. And that's where a solid axle on the front gives you more stability and can also give you a little bit more articulation without losing control. So, when you talk about, you know, what do I want to drive as a rock crawler? Well, the default is probably going to be something that has solid axles on the front and the rear.
A Jeep.
Unless you go crazy and if you go to the King of the Hammers and you look what those guys are driving.
Oh, hell yeah.
They're driving independent front and rear, but they've got long travel everything, and they've got 30 inches of travel, and that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, we're not
talking about a whole different thing.
A whole different ball of wax.
And so, you know, I'm a Toyota guy, because
he owns a Land Cruiser.
Just because of the way I grew up and the first vehicle that I really had. That said, I spend some time in Jeeps, and like it's amazing to see the difference in capability depending on what you're driving on. That said, I have a really nice, sweet, smooth drive home because of that independent front suspension. So depending on where you're going and what your we talked about primary use, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to spend most of your time driving on the road, and independent front suspension is going to be nicer for that, and you can do some off-road stuff.
Well, you can make the argument that most people will spend most of the time on road.
This is true. This is true.
Yes.
We're giving people the benefit of the doubt that they're going to be honest about their actual uses.
But most people will buy a vehicle based on what they're not going to do with it most of the time.
True. This is true.
But although what they want to do with it.
There are people who have an income bracket that allows them to have a dedicated off-road vehicle.
Yeah, that gets silly.
Yeah. Yeah, it does get silly.
I have this rule. Yeah. If you have to trailer it, I'm not on board.
Oh, well,
yeah. It's Chinaman.
Chinaman's
no,
Gulch.
No, no, no. next to it. It's right
Carnage.
There. Carnage Canyon.
Carnage Canyon, yeah.
With this fan of ours who had a lifted Jeep on like 48s or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And or just massive tires.
Yeah.
And it took us, it's like a 2 mile trail, and it took us like all day.
Yeah.
Basically, you're like,
no, I took a buddy up there. We did a trip out to Moab, and on the way back, we stopped in Buena Vista and we went and did Carnage Canyon. And we did it solo with him. And so I spotted him all the way through. And yeah, it was a 4 hour, yeah. half the time on the side, winching back on.
Yeah.
But he also had a really modestly built. Yeah, he was like at 37.
Well, there are winch points, yeah. But it just stops being fun.
It depends on what your goal is.
I know. If you're, this is your life and you love this, more power to you. I'm not going to be a gatekeeper, but personally, I like to be able to drive to the trail.
I do too. It's really fun to go out with those guys, though, especially as a spotter. I love going out with them, and I'll be out here spotting you and helping you recover, and that's a good day too.
And then the other thing we'll end up on this is the little button that's the disconnectable sway bar, because now Toyotas, of course, have them as well.
Oh, that's right.
And so a sway bar keeps your vehicle from, if you're going around a turn on a road, right?
Yeah,
it keeps it flat as opposed to like.
Yeah, it basically links the right and left side so that if you put pressure on this one, it equalizes it so you don't get sway.
Yeah, which is great when you're going down the road. You don't want to be like on a boat.
Right.
But it's not what you want. You want articulation when you're off-road because you want to keep the tires in contact with the ground.
Yes.
And not hanging up in the air. And so when you disconnect the sway bar, it lets the tires articulate more, which gives you better traction.
Instead of doing this, you're doing this.
Yeah.
So,
Which is, you know, is good. And it also, for me personally, and this has become, as I get older, one of the things that I hate is head bob, right? Mm. It's like I hate, maybe that's also why I hate any massive off-roaders, right? I don't like spending a day where my head is just going back and forth, and forth.
Especially as a passenger.
As a driver, you know when it's coming.
Well, and you've got two more points of contact.
Even though, you know what, bar doesn't help, and you just feel silly.
Yeah.
But
it's really good for the obliques, though.
Yeah. And I have a bad back, so I don't really enjoy that.
I could see that, yeah.
Well, guys, I hope that you found this episode fun. Thank you, Eric. Why don't you give a quick shout out again to your website, and if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how they would do that.
Yeah, I've got a website at sierramechanica.com. You can find me on Facebook at Sierra Mechanica, or you can find me on there, Eric Ross, also. I've got my phone number on there. You're welcome to give me a call, shoot me an email.
I couldn't recommend a better person if you're looking to either up your game or if you're looking to get in the game. Either way, this is the man you want to talk to and spend some time with. You know, he just knows his stuff backwards and forwards.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Great chatting.
Yeah, it was fun. We got to do some more trail rides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun when we did our trail ride in Moab. All right, guys, and as always, head on over to altfl.com, and we'll see you next time. Ciao.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.